We've already spoken about the most fundamental Marian dogma, her divine maternity, and we mentioned that the other Marian dogmas flow from it. The second dogma concerning Mary is that of her perpetual virginity, that is, that she was a virgin before, during, and after the birth of Christ. No one disputes that Mary was a virgin before the birth of Christ, especially because Isaiah prophesied about the virgin birth. But many non-Catholic Christians dispute that she remained a virgin. Before looking at the New Testament and historical sources which confirm the perpetual virginity, there is a strong argument in favor of this article of faith in the Old Testament. Remember that the Ark of the Covenant was considered the very place where God's presence dwelt among the Israelites, both wandering in the desert and finally in the temple. The Ark was considered exceedingly holy, as it contained the miraculous manna, the tablets of the law, and the flowering priestly rod of Aaron. So holy was the Ark that God dictated its design and materials, and then commanded that it could not be touched by anyone, even the group of Levites who were designated to process with it by carrying it on poles. To touch it was to die, as we see from the example of Uzzah in 2 Samuel. He simply reached out to steady it when it was being transported, and he was struck dead. We are all aware that everything in the Old Testament points to the New, that the Old is fulfilled in the New, and that everything that happened in the Old was a shadow of the realities to be revealed in the New. This being the case, we can see how and why Mary was considered the new Ark of the Covenant very early on in the Church. After all, the manna, the tablets of the law, and the priestly rod of Aaron were holy objects, but they were only faint symbols of the true bread from heaven, the true lawgiver, and the true high priest, Christ. And Christ, who fulfilled all these images, was carried in the womb of the Blessed Virgin. So if Mary did not remain a virgin, it would make her womb, which carried God incarnate, less holy than that which prefigured it, and this is not how God's revelation works. St. Augustine, beautifully connecting Christ's conception and resurrection to Mary's virginity, says, quote, "As in the sepulchre where the body of our Savior was deposited, no other mortal lay before or since, so neither did the womb of Mary ever either before or after bear any other body but that of her divine Son," unquote. Regarding Mary's virginity during the birth of Christ, which in the natural course of events would involve the damage of a woman's physical integrity, the fathers of the Church said that Christ, who miraculously passed through the locked door into the upper room, was delivered miraculously without any harm to Mary's physical virginity. These testimonies remind us that if we believe God created the world out of nothing, performed countless miracles, and rose from the dead, why are so many so slow to believe that Christ can perform such miracles for his beloved mother? There's an ancient historical source called the Proto-Evangelium of James, written in the early 2nd century, within the lifetime of close associates of the apostles, which tells of Mary's vow of perpetual virginity in the temple as a young girl. This, while not scriptural, was considered a reliable historical witness, and it explains Mary's question to the angel, "How can this be, since I have no relations with the man?" A question which would make no sense unless she had promised perpetual virginity to God, since she would not be ignorant of how a woman normally conceives. Were she not a perpetual virgin, her presumption would be that she and Joseph would have a child in the normal way. One objection that is very common stems from the several mentions in the Gospels of Jesus' brothers or brethren. But this was dealt with by the early fathers of the Church, who noted that the word brother was used in ancient cultures to designate any close family relation. Consider, for example, that Lot is called Abraham's brother, even though he was his nephew. And St. Paul in 1 Corinthians says that Christ appeared to 500 brethren at once. And the language spoken by Christ and his family and followers, Aramaic, has no word for relations such as cousins. Even today in Middle Eastern culture, the word brother is used loosely. In addition to this, some of the people said to be Jesus' brothers, for example James and Joseph, are in other places said to be the actual sons of a different Mary, who was probably related to the mother of Jesus, and thus these brothers were indeed Jesus' cousins. Another objection regards the use of the term firstborn when talking about presenting Jesus in the temple, since the law dictated that the firstborn son be dedicated. But firstborn here does not imply that he was the first of several, because it is not as if the law prescribes that you wait to see if there are others and then dedicate the first. The firstborn is the firstborn even if there is no secondborn. Yet another objection relates to the verse that says that Joseph did not have relations with Mary until she had brought forth Jesus, some asserting that this means their marriage included normal marital relations after that. But this again was easily answered by the Church Fathers early on, since until does not necessarily mean after which something did happen, but only that something did not happen up to the very moment of. For example, it was said that David's wife Michal did not have any children until she died. Furthermore, consider that were Mary to have had other children besides Jesus, it would have been strange and even disrespectful for Christ to have entrusted Mary to the care of John the Apostle at the foot of the cross. Mary would have had caretakers if she had other sons. In addition to all of the historical and scriptural evidence, it seems to me that the argument from fittingness is perhaps just as persuasive. Does it seem likely and fitting that Mary, the one from whom we receive the Savior of the world, whose womb was sanctified by holding the God-man, who enjoyed the most unique privilege and grace of any creature, should continue on and live as if this were just some nice little episode early on in her marriage? Obviously not. As soon as we ask these questions, we see the truth and fittingness of Mary's perpetual virginity.